Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and these are the stories that you need to know about today. San Francisco, once a great American city, now it's a mess. And I'm going to tell you why. And then there's Congressman Adam Schiff is robbed. And you're never going to be able to guess where it's happening. And also, U.S. Christians who choose Zionism over everything else, including other Christians. So say other Christians. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. All right, so let's get started with this. Something appears to be happening to a great American city that is sadly emblematic of what is happening really across the country. San Francisco has become a city of either really rich, or really poor, a place where homeless people are everywhere, a place where few can afford even a one-bedroom apartment, a place where crime is so rampant, police cannot stop it. In fact, they do not stop it. People walk into stores and just walk out with whatever it is they want. Stores are starting to use chains to lock things up as best they can. It's also why a lot of the big stores, a lot of the big corporations in the United States, they're just getting out. They're leaving town.
In less than a month, these three Target stores in the Bay Area will all be shut down. And the reason? It's something we're seeing far too often.
Whole Foods is closing its largest store in San Francisco over safety concerns. Store managers tell us they're temporarily closing the mid-market location to ensure the safety of their team members.
Starbucks will be closing 7 locations in downtown San Francisco, and you see the locations on this map. 6 of them are within a few blocks of Market Street in the Financial District or Union Square. 1 is on Van Ness Avenue at Bush Street.
According to an analysis by the San Francisco Standard, nearly half of the non-service retailers in the city's Union Square District have closed since 2019. Major stores like Crate and Barrel, Anthropologie, and H&M, just a few of the almost 100 shuttered in the last few years.
You know, there's a multitude of reasons for this. And yeah, look, one of them is the economy. It's become the kind of place where you have to almost be a millionaire to be able to live there. And that's kind of creating this almost, dare I say, third world situation in many ways. Manila, you're from California. What do you think is going on? What's making San Francisco the place where everybody's looking at it and saying, what happened?
Well, Rick, first, let me start off by saying I'm from Southern California, and we have always wanted to secede from Northern California because, you know, that's where all the people are that are making the laws that the rest of us in Southern California don't tend to agree with. Huh. And one of them is the crime bills and these crime laws that are so laxed, it's starting to feed its way down to SoCal. Now, the crime is getting so bad in San Francisco that, I mean, it's not just the Starbucks and the Crate Barrels and stuff like that that are leaving the city in droves. Grocery stores, as you just saw, Whole Foods and, you know, other regular stores, if we don't want to call it, you know, the high-end stores, Safeway, Amazon Fresh, things like that, they are leaving in droves. The Whole Foods that was shown just now, they called 911 568 times in 2023. Small grocers, everybody, you name it. When grocery stores start leaving cities, those cities crumble. Towns will crumble. People got to eat. It's so bad now, Rick, that last month, 2 local legislators are now pushing a bill that would allow San Francisco residents to sue the grocery store for closing up shop. They called it the Grocery Protection Act. The San Francisco Board of Supervisors are basically trying to force these retailers and mostly, you know, the grocery stores to stay in the city. The only caveat is they got to give a 6-month notice to the local consumer that they're closing. Obviously, this bill is aimed at forcing stores to stick around, you know, rather than reduce crime in the city or incentivize businesses to stay. They're just going to say, let's let the locals sue the grocery store.
That's kind of what's going on now. And they say the only way you could ever fix thing in our society is to make sure the big people at the top are affected, because if it's only the little people being affected, no one's going to do anything about it. Well, here's some big people. The situation's so bad, members of Congress have been robbed. I mean, who could forget what happened to Nancy Pelosi's husband, right? And now Congressman Adam Schiff, that guy, that Adam Schiff, also becomes a crime victim. Take a look at this.
Thieves broke into his car on Thursday when it was parked in a downtown parking garage. That's according to the San Francisco Chronicle. The thieves stole his bag, and without a business suit to wear, Schiff still went to that event in Burlingame. He did, though, have to wear just the T-shirt and hiking vest.
Yeah, you know why? Because that's where he's going to get some donations from some big donors, and that he's not going to miss out on. He's not the only one, though. But it's interesting that a guy like Schiff is being affected, and they're even hitting him, the criminals, that is.
Well, I mean, Rick, lucky for him, it was his car that was broken into, just some luggage that was taken. Lucky for him. But that is every 30 seconds or so in San Francisco, somebody somewhere, their car is getting broken into. I was just in San Francisco a few months ago, and there are signs all over the city specifically tell you, lock your car, put anything, even an iPhone charger, put that away. Don't put anything in eyesight, because car break-ins are that rampant and police can't do anything apparently to stop it, that, you know, this is just par for the course.
You know, something else that we're following now is something much has been said recently about the almost bizarre and unequivocal support for the Israeli government of Bibi Netanyahu, and much of it has to do, and this is a somewhat delicate subject because, you know, it affects people's sensibilities, but I think this is really important. Not only does it have to do with money, but also with the Zionist movement in general, which has in many ways convinced certain Christians, respectfully, this is what they believe, that somehow Israelis and Jews are the most important people in the world, even more important than other Christians. Now, my friend Tucker Carlson has been following the story, and he's been getting a lot of heat for doing this, by the way. Listen to this Christian minister, who, by the way, was on with Tucker. He's in Palestine. He told Tucker, and as he's told others who have spoken with him recently, that as a Christian, he feels abandoned by U.S. Christians. Here it is.
Evangelicals read the Bible in a very literal and simple way. They believe that you have to bless Israel so that God blesses you. So it's like Israel becomes a gauge of whether you receive blessing from God. You know, makes me wonder what kind of God they are meeting in the Bible. The God I meet in the Bible is a God of love, is a God of peace. They see in it an image of God who's a tribal God who favors one nation over everyone else based on a promise that's thousands of years old.
So, and by the way, there's a genesis to this, and I want to try and make it make sense as much as possible. But the genesis of all this is that many U.S. evangelicals believe that somehow when the end times come and when the rapture comes, they are going to be able to go to heaven and be saved. But everyone else, right, include all the non-believers, including Jews, by the way, who live in Israel, and Israelis who are Jewish or of the Jewish faith, they're not. So they're going to be essentially staying here and they will die. So it's almost like they're saying now, and this is what a lot of people are tussling with, they're saying they want to protect and defend all Jews, but eventually they expect that all Jews will die. In fact, let's listen to some of the ministers who say essentially this very thing.
If you're a Christian, you will not be around for the tribulation period. You'll be safely in heaven.
And this tribulation period, some believe, is a violent and bloody war for those who remain behind.
Jesus Christ will speak the word and he will summon in the most dramatic act of warfare in human history. He will bring about the slaughter of those who reject him.
So this is the irony of all of this. The same people who are protecting Israel and saying it's okay, this thing that's going on in Gaza with the Palestinians, are people who are also saying that when the end times come, all the Jews are going to die. It's a very perplexing argument that a lot of people are having a hard time understanding, but it's leading to Christians in the Middle East and other parts of the world saying, what about us, Manila?
Yeah, it's kind of like a Gordian knot, isn't it? I mean, I feel like these Christian Zionists are sort of turning their backs on their Arab Christian brethren who are being harmed as well by Israel's onslaught in Gaza. Basically, to save their own hide, Rick. I mean, but let's be clear, anybody of any faith or non-faith, they can be a Zionist. But according to Pew Research, Pew says that white American evangelicals are twice as likely to believe that God gave Israel to the Jewish people and that that's why they're defending it, is really to save their own hide. So they don't really care if, you know, other Christian denominations or other, any religion, the Jewish people, they don't care. Well, you know, when the rapture comes, they care about themselves as long as they are following the, I guess it's the Old Testament that says, you know, you gotta give Israel to the Jews.
They are the chosen people. Yeah, that's what they believe. And it's perplexing. And nonetheless, right now, it's as important a story as anything else we can follow. This story caught my eye, so I thought I should share this with you. It's a sign of the times when something that used to be as innocent as the Boy Scouts no longer even exists, and they have to change their name. But apparently, look, this is the case right now.
America will soon be no more. During an annual meeting in Orlando today, the organization announcing they will change their name to Scouting America. It is a significant shift for the organization as they try to emerge from bankruptcy following a flood of sexual abuse claims this past year.
Tough conversation to have, but this has a lot to do with the fact that many people who were indecent chose to become Boy Scouts leader because they knew it was a place where they would find young men and they abused them. I mean, it hurts to say it, but I think that's the truth. And that was what turned into the downfall of this organization. No?
Well, I mean, so look, here's since we're talking about Genesis, let's talk about the genesis of the Boy Scouts of America and to their new rebrand, Scouting America. In 2017, they actually began allowing trans kids who identified as boys to enroll. So they kept the brand Boy Scouts. And then in 2018, girls who identify as girls could also enroll into the Boy Scouts. But then 2020, that's when they filed BK. And then we learned that approximately there were at least outstanding 275 lawsuits outstanding revolving around sexual abuse. And then it was later discovered that the insurers of the Boy Scouts actually knew of 1,400 other claims of sexual abuse. And then 2023, a federal judge upheld this $2.4 billion plan, allowing the group to still operate while compensating, get this, Rick, 80,000 now adult grown men who had filed claims saying that they were sexually abused. So, you know, the focus shouldn't be so much on the rebranding and the name. I think that's kind of the irrelevant point. The point here is there are 80,000 men.
The point should be the sexual abuse of children, which is what happened with this organization. And it's not about anybody's sexual preference or anybody's anything else. It's the fact that bad people were allowed to get into an organization and do bad things to young people. And I think that's in the end
what happened.
Yeah. And we should call it what it is. And it's always great to call you. Manila, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
When we come back, who said this about the times that we now live in? We no longer have the luxury of playing team sports when it comes to our foreign policy. We have a war machine that seems content with putting us all on the brink of a nuclear disaster. And it's time that we, the people, set aside our isms and join together. Who said that? Craig Pastajardula, and he will join us right here. Next, don't go away.
I look forward to talking to you all.
That technology should work for people.
A robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law.
Show your identification.
We should be very careful about artificial intelligence.
The point, obviously, is to create trust rather than fear.
I would like to take on various jobs.
I mean, with artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon.
A robot must protect its own existence.
القاهرة لها طعم خاص ما تقدرش تلاقيه في أي حتة تانية. أنا فاكر كنا نمشي في الشوارع دي نفوت على المحلات والمقاهي ودور السينما.
السلام عليكم.
اللي كان طائر من كايرو ويست الى دمشق
غرب القاهره.
50 سنة ومصر اتغيرت قد ايه؟ اتغير العالم واحنا اتغيرنا.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez and this is Direct Impact and we're joined by Craig Pasta-Jardula. You see him all over the place, on the Googles, as they say, or on the internets, especially with our friend Jimmy Dore. You said this, and it caught my eye, because you had this this gathering, which I thought was important for all of us to think about having more often. You said, we have a war machine that seems content with putting us all on the brink of a nuclear disaster. It's time we, the people, set aside the isms. I like that. And we join together. You know, Craig, as I hear those words, I keep seeing in the background everybody else who doesn't understand that. And I mean members of the media, members of our national conversation, our politicians, the Senate, the Congress, even people running for president of the United States, none of which seem to understand that. How the hell do we break through that?
That's the million-dollar question, Rick. I mean, I look at all these situations, and that's why I put it together. I think the only way we can break through this is we, the people, whatever that means, at least a decent amount of us come together and put aside these isms. You know, just last week I was at the Mines Festival and I was on a panel, is America becoming a communist country? And you can just see this is more about planting the seeds of division. It's divide and conquer. So the only way we can push past this is if we quit playing team sports, we put aside our differences and understand that there's a ruling class that sits above everything. And it's just about them versus the rest of us. And until we acknowledge that, until we eliminate cancel culture, because that's what cancel culture is meant to do, is meant to divide us. But until we can do that, Rick, we're in trouble. We're in danger here right now. And unfortunately, there might be a little sliver of the populist right out there. People like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz, who I disagree with a lot of things, but say some things that push back against the war machine itself, right?
Yes.
We don't have that on the left. It's not there. Where's the SWAT? Where's, you know, Barbara Lee? Where are these people out there? When are we going to get a voice out there?
Is it the money? Because, I mean, let's face it, there was a time when our forefathers took these jobs and it had screwed up their lives. I mean, it was some farmer who lived in Georgia who suddenly had to get on a horse to go all the way to Philadelphia to have a meeting with the other people. He didn't make any money on that. In fact, his crops suddenly spoiled because he did that. Today, these guys do these jobs because they make millions and millions of dollars doing it. Aka McConnell, $32 million. Aka Pelosi, $124 million net worth. Give me a break, Craig.
Yeah, well, you just mentioned the stenographers, right? The people who represent the ruling class, they're really powerful there. And yes, they do it for the money. They do it for comfortability. They do it because I think these people have the personality of narcissists. They can never admit that they're wrong.
Yeah.
But we also have to remember that even though these people in our Congress that are, you know, are supposed to represent the people are doing it for the donors and the money, the people who have that money to give them that money, it's not that they just have that money. It's more sinister. They actually create the money. They print the money. So really, to tell you at the end of the day, it's all about control. It's not so much about money. It's about control. controlling the work, controlling the people, controlling the narrative, controlling the resources. That's what we're all about right now. And that's what we've had this kind of global conflict where you see China and Russia on one side, the United States on another.
Yeah, but
this is some dangerous stuff.
But
this is more about money. It's about control, Rick.
But here's where it's changing. And I'm sure you're familiar with this because you follow BRICS. You follow the Global South community. We're now seeing a community that involves not just China and Russia, which it's always easy to point the finger at China and Russia, say, ah, there's the enemy. But there's China, there's Russia, there's Saudi Arabia, there's Brazil, there's India, there's Iran. Suddenly, this little consortium of enemies that we'd like to point our fingers to is not little anymore. It seems to be getting bigger and bigger. And guys like, you know, Joe Biden, God bless his little heart, you know, is an old guy who grew up during the Cold War. He doesn't get it. And Trump doesn't get it either. And none of these guys do. I'm not sure Bobby Kennedy gets it.
A lot of people feel that Bobby Kennedy is just compromised, right? That he can't be that wrong when it comes to Zionism and the state of Israel. And now how it can spin out of control. And that's a good point you mentioned. It is more just about those countries, but the BRICS countries, and they have other groups joining them, and I've been to Latin America and seen this. They understand that they don't have to live under America's thumb anymore, that the foreign policy mechanism, since they control a lot of the resources and they have a blueprint like China of going in there and saying, hey, let us help with our infrastructure instead of our military. You know, they understand that now. And I think that's the biggest difference. And you're right. There are all of these other small countries that are no longer going to play by the United States rules. But it's important to say that it's not we the people. And that's what we have to recognize. We don't want these conflicts. We don't want to go around sending all our money abroad and, you know, having militaries and controlling these other governments. We, the people, want stuff here at home. We want to take care of ourselves. So as long as we understand that, we could possibly fight back against this mechanism.
You know, I'm here saying this, and I do reach millions of people. You reach probably millions of people. So does Jimmy Dore. So does Joe Rogan. There are people out there in an alternative platforms who are trying to cut through, and yet, why does it seem like it's the Rachel Maddows and the Sean Hannitys and the Anderson Coopers and all these other buffoons, dare I say, who get all the attention when I look at their ratings, they could barely do 250,000 people in a key demo. Yet they're the ones who are spreading the message that too many Americans, you know, are faithful to.
Well, I would also point out your show, Rick, that you don't get as many views as you should get because why? We have people behind the mechanism that have the keys to the kingdom. They control the algorithms. They control the information flow of information. They can do things like demonetize, censor, shadow ban. All these things are occurring, especially when you speak out against this narrative. So what I would argue, the fact that we don't have an open source system where the people can see how the mechanism is run with outlets like YouTube, which, you know, God bless places like Rumble or BitChute or any of these places, Rockfin, that come along and have a platform that want to share our news, there's still the small guy in a big pond, and the big part of the pond is controlled by those who are in power, controlling the means of how we get our information.
Okay,
why we don't get our news
out
there.
I'll grant you that, but here's the problem with that. What's going on right now is it seems that those people who control, and those people in the corporate situations who control things, and those people who are the military contractors and their buddies at the Pentagon and the politicians who take their money and then act on whatever it is they want, those people don't understand the very things, I think, that you and I are talking about. And when we do tell them that there's another polarity that exists out there, they look at it as an opportunity to start a new war so that they can make more money. So it's like we're kind of damned if we do and we're damned if we don't with those folks. You know, we can break through to the people, but until we get to those people and hold them accountable, you know, it's hard to get anything done as a country. And it's frustrating as hell, by the way.
I can imagine. I mean, it is really. But I think that we have to understand the mechanism. What they have out there, Rick, is what they're called social engineers. So they understand the actual anatomy of the way of thinking of the human brain, how to move it, how to persuade it and whatnot. So they also put these people in charge who are just textbook narcissists. They can never admit that they're wrong. They're elevated that they're more important than everybody else. And that's what's going on. So if we understand the mechanism and we understand the people who are put in control, we can push back against that. But it's going to take conversations like this and people like us to continue to let it keep going. Real journalism, that is.
Do you ever use or do you believe in that term that, you know, that we often talk about, that the big state? I always wondered. I've always tussled with that word. I don't like it. Because, you know, I hate words that, you know, become almost, you know, the epitome of something instead of being something. But what do you, because that's basically what you're describing. What do you make of that choice of words that people often use?
Well, it's good that you practice that kind of thinking, because I think in every single situation, whether it be the ruling class trying to manipulate things from the right, the ruling class trying to manipulate things from the left, they will take words like that, deep state, and spin it out of control, make anybody who believes in it or talk about it like a conspiracy theory. But you have to look at it for what it is, Rick. It is a bunch of unelected officials who make a lot of decisions about our foreign policy and a lot of the decisions about the way we live here in America and who controls the money. I mean, this is in our face. It is true, whether you want to call it a deep state, an intelligence community, a ruling class. We have to recognize that there is a small group of people who are trying to control not only resources on this planet, but what we hear, what we say, what we speak, and we can see as far as news out there. So we have to recognize the mechanism for what it is, whatever you want to call it.
That's fantastic. Hey, do me a favor. Can you come on back? I want to have more conversations with you about this, because I really think you are onto something. I a lot of us spend a lot of time talking about these subjects and talk about, you know, unnecessary wars. I mean, we were in Afghanistan for 20 years, and the only reason it ever even became a news story was the last week when they could use it as some political wedge issue. Like, that's the only time we screwed up in Afghanistan. We screwed up for 19 years in Afghanistan. It was more than just the last week, but yet it becomes a political tool. A bludgeoning tool for one side to use against the other. And that's the problem that we have. And that's why these conversations too often aren't heard on places like CNN or Fox or any of these other stations. Craig, it's a delight. It really is. It's a delight to talk to you. Keep up the good work, and we look forward to seeing you here again, okay?
Thanks for having me on, Rick.
Yeah, and our regards to Jimmy once again. Before we go, I want to remind you of what we do here, right? What we do, our mission, to try and de-silo the world. I mean, we need to stop living in these little boxes, right? Truths don't live in boxes. Truths are everywhere. It's not about what you believe and then finding people who agree with you. It's about finding what other people may think. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll see you again next time, right here on Direct Impact.